Alright, are we ready? Yeah, yes, ready.
See, prepared.
Hi everyone, this is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 162 for January 29th, 2009. Today, Microsoft decapitates their Games for Windows program, GameStop fires a shot across Steam's bow, how to get an A in StarCraft, a new pending Warhammer Online expansion looms, the Fear 2 demo is out, and some scientist types state the obvious about gaming violence. Plus, you can test your sound effect knowledge in our new and exciting quiz, and we'll field your questions after the music. I'm your host and PC Gamer's Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, and aboard the podcast express today are our hardware know-it-all, Logan Decker.
Hello.
Reviews editor, Evan Lottie.
For the Emperor.
Our intern, Josh Augustine.
La la la.
Former PC Gamer editor, Chuck Osborne. Welcome back, Chuck.
Thank you, Regis. It's good to be back.
And our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, now that the formalities have been dispensed with, we've got some catching up to do after missing last week's show due to some Robert Redford related complications, as Andy was off working at Sundance. But anyway, as many of you have heard by now, Microsoft has been hit by the economic downturn like everybody else, and I guess they had their first layoffs ever in the history of the company. And the highest profile victim of that layoff spree was Chris Early, the general manager of the Games for Windows program, which he'd only been running since July of 2007. I guess it's kind of easy to blame him for like the lack of real progress of Games for Windows over the past couple of years, but it probably had more to do with Microsoft starving him of resources than any lack of initiative on his part. But it kind of shakes confidence in the already kind of shaky Games for Windows platform, especially just a couple days after the Fallout 3 DLC came out, the Operation Anchorage expansion, mini expansion, which was just kind of a nightmare of an install process for a lot of people, and I didn't it took me a little while to get it to work right too, and the Games for Windows the whole thing is kind of shaky, especially next to Steam and Impulse and a bunch of other competing systems that work better from smaller companies. So Microsoft has put out a statement saying, "Moving ahead, Microsoft will continue to invest in Windows as a first-class gaming platform through great Windows out-of-box experiences, our online gaming services, including Games for Windows Live, MSN games and Messenger games, and through new games for Windows developed by Microsoft Game Studios. Our Windows gaming service efforts will be led by General Manager Ron Pessner, who is joining Microsoft's interactive entertainment business. He comes from within Microsoft's entertainment and devices division. Working closely with Ron will be Dave Lumen, a longtime Microsoft Games veteran and general manager within the Microsoft Game Studios, who will now be overseeing internal development and publishing for all Windows-based games. Beyond these changes, we are not commenting on specific personnel issues at this time."
But the fundamentals of the Games for Windows program are strong.
Yeah, I mean, that's really one of the most... That's one of the most joyless, least inspiring press releases I think they could have put out about this. I mean, it's almost like Polaroid coming out and saying, "Yes, we're still strongly behind film."
Yeah, you know who has a really easy job now? This Dave Lehman guy. He's now heading up the development and publishing of all Zero games that Microsoft is releasing for the PC. And what kind of job is that? They have. I can't think of a single game they have announced, and they just killed off, like the Flight Sim team. That tomorrow they close down Ensemble Studios for good. What are they talking about? I guess they have like a train simulator.
You can hear the clack, clack, clack of the desk toy on his desk,
Right. Well, I kind of got the idea that they were wanting to get out of any of those type of sim markets, anything that was really niche, that they're trying to really put all of their eggs into the big basket, you know, the most profitable genres available. And that's why they're getting out flight sims and, you know, train sims and all that type of stuff.
But that's weird, though, because, I mean, they've gotten out of everything else first. That was, like, the last thing they were making for PC. You know, it seems like they would have stuck with the shooters and the RTSs, but they're closing those down right and left. And, you know, they're just putting all their eggs in the Xbox basket, which is, you know, why it's kind of insulting to hear them say that they're going to continue to invest in the PC as a first-class gaming platform. Are they going to continue what they've been doing? That's not...
Well, I get the feeling that in the beginning with Games for Windows and Games for Windows Live specifically, that there was just a lot of mismanagement going on. But now I kind of get the feeling that because of that mismanagement, now they have so few resources available that they're putting all those resources behind the most profitable area, which is the Xbox 360.
Which you know, makes sense from a business standpoint. I just kind of wish they wouldn't say we're going to continue to invest in Windows as a first-class gaming platform when they're clearly not.
Well, I think they have to say that. They have to say that and at least pay lip service to it. But I would like to see what they actually do next. And until they show something, I think that all of us as PC gamers just have to kind of say, well, you know, Microsoft, you're dropping the ball.
Right.
And if they're not willing to show something, the very least that they can do is to allow you to play the game that you already bought, which unfortunately, if it happens to be Gears of War for PC, would not be possible today.
Yeah, apparently there's a post on Joystick here about it says whoever pushes the button that renews the Gears of War PC certificate. I'm not even sure what that means by a certificate. But perhaps they say perhaps relative to the guy that pushes the Zune button fell asleep at the switch. As of January 28, 2009, the Gears of War piece on the PC has expired, rendering it unplayable for any user with a later system date.
Wah, wah, wah.
The Gears of War forums are ablaze with reports of broken games. Though many are reporting simply that simply changing the system clock to an earlier date will allow the game to run. And yeah,
we are continuing to put our resources behind a first-class gaming platform.
Yeah, all the resources it takes. Why would they even set it up to expire on January 28th, 2009? Why would it expire at all? Why would a game that you buy have a built-in expiration date?
And why January 29th?
28th.
What's important about today?
Was it on the Mayan calendar originally, maybe, as some sort of, you know?
Maybe Chris Early knew in advance he would play that, and he set that date.
It was a poison pill.
Sabotage.
Yeah, if anything happens to me...
I'm taking Gears of War down with me.
Oh, no.
I'm actually kind of surprised that there are enough people still left playing... you know, Gears of War on the PC to set any forum ablaze, but I mean, you know, it didn't make that big of a splash on the PC, and that was what, 2 years ago that came out. But Chris Graft of Edge Online wrote a piece a couple of days ago about whether Microsoft is really committed to gaming on the PC, and you know, his conclusion is of course not. You know, that they've done nothing but. He says, since 2006, the software giant has dissolved no less than 5 internal studios that had PC gaming focus. Aces, A Flight Sim, Ensemble, Age of Empires, Digital Anvil, Freelancer, Hired Gun, Halo 2 PC, and FASA Interactive, a MechWarrior, and Shadowrun. And you know, this is a really long article. I won't read the whole thing, but he's... You know, he just lays out, you know, example after example of how Microsoft has just been dismantling anything to do with PC gaming. That, you know, and all of it is, you know, I agree with every single word he says here. It's kind of disgraceful, and again, a slap in the face that they would continue to say that they're investing in Windows, but they're clearly not. Even DirectX 11, I was reading about it the other day, how they seem to be more interested in harnessing the power of GPUs for non-gaming applications. You know, like in a similar technology similar to NVIDIA's CUDA, doing things like video transcoding and things like that. They seem to be more interested in doing that than advancing, you know, making it a better platform for gaming. Which, you know, come on, it's DirectX. At least they're still working on it, I guess, but really?
Yeah. Well, you know, good riddance. I mean, what have they really done? You know, it's like may as well just move over and let people who are doing things right, you know, like the folks at StarDrop, the folks at Valve, you know, let people who are doing things right take over.
Right.
And, you know, in this business with, you know, I mean, sure, mistakes happen. This business with Gears of War, you know, it happens, but it just sort of emphasizes the fact that, you know, it's just going to be one blunder after another. And if you can't manage the business right, then just kind of step aside. You know, maybe it's for the best.
Well, I'd always heard conspiracy theories that, you know, Microsoft was actually trying to funnel everybody from the PC over to the Xbox 360. And so that's why they were actually making the PC less desirable to make games for. And I always, like, laughed at that. But you really have to wonder with some of these recent missteps, you know, exactly what is it they're trying to do? And you know, if they want to get out of, you know, making games for the PC, why not just say so and turn it over to other people, like Logan said, who are better able to do it?
Right. And why lock Bethesda into doing, you know, their DLC over this Games for Windows Marketplace, which is terrible.
Suck.
And you know, I would be all in favor of Games for Windows just going away, except that
sorry,
the service, not the actual.
No, I know. It was just funny.
And I absolutely agree because as much as I like it on the 360, you know, sorry, I do play 360 every once in a while, but I wanted to also get the new Fallout 3, you know, DLC. But the one thing that was in the back of my mind was, oh no, I'm going to have to go through Games for Windows Live in order to
get
on the PC. And instead of being a help, it's more of a hindrance.
Right. But the one reason I would not want it to go away is because they've already convinced a few developers to integrate their technology into their games. So if Live for Windows were to just go away, then it would break games like Dawn of War 2, which, you know, is going to be a really good game, and you know, that's all of its multiplayer functionality is built around Games for Windows. I think there's going to be less of that in the future, because I asked Relic, you know, why did you go with Games for Windows, especially when you're, you know, tying the game to Steam for your copy protection, you know, why integrate Games for Windows? And they explained to me that that the Steam the way Steam's multiplayer structure is set up right now, it is more oriented towards a client server relationship, and what they wanted was a peer to peer relationship for setting up multiplayer games. So instead of logging into a server like you do on Left 4 Dead or Counter Strike or Team Fortress 2. They want to, you know, players to be able to host their own games and other people join them. So at the time, at least when they were doing that, Steam's setup was not great for that. In the near future, they may be making that change. But yeah, it certainly wasn't for any reason that they disliked Games for Windows better as a service. And hopefully going forward, Steam will offer a better alternative that other developers will jump on.
Yeah, I played actually a few games of Dawn of War beta last night with Andy Salisbury and our other friend, and everything went pretty smoothly. I mean, we all had gamer tags beforehand and everything, but it was went as smoothly as it could, I think. So
yeah,
that's one example of it going well.
It does work fairly well. I mean, in that aspect of it, the multiplayer matching and like when I was working on the review, I was able to just call somebody up and say, hey, join me in co-op for Dawn of War, and this is pretty seamlessly came in. It is a pain to have another buddy list in Games for Windows though, that you used to call people in. It's scattered all over the place. It's like, oh, I have you on AIM and I have you on Steam, but I don't have you on Games for Windows. You know, I gotta add everybody again.
Yeah.
It's so decentralized, which, you know, is kind of unavoidable in an open platform, but still a pain. Anyway, Games for Windows is not going away. Is the bottom line? It's just going to keep limping along for a while.
Well, I hope that it doesn't go away. I just want them to make it better, because I still firmly believe that it could be a very good, robust system, but they've just kind of neglected it and really haven't given it all of the resources and help that it should have.
Right, but I'm just saying that if it's going to be here, I hope they don't tie it to a bunch of games and essentially cripple them with a half-assed service. So either go big or go home is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would like to see it go away. Now it's just got such a bad sort of aura around it, and there's nothing appealing in it anymore. Not to me. Whereas I go to, they have Painkiller Black Edition on good old games now, GOG.com. And I went there, it's like $10. I download it, downloads automatically. There's no hassles, no funny business. They don't want me to sign up for, GOG Live, blah, 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 blah. And, it gets slapped on my desktop. There's no DRM. I can put it on my laptop, on my computer, it's easy. Everything works. And then they shovel all this character art, at me as well. They're all extra stuff.
They also don't force you to buy GOG points.
Yeah, exactly. Everything just works the way you want it to, and it works. It's easy. Right. And they just get out of your way, and they let you have fun, and it's a great deal, So I can't wait to go back and buy something from them again, So I always go back and I'm like, ooh, what have they got now? I love that service because it makes it fun to be a gamer.
That's one thing that really pisses me off about Windows Games for Windows Marketplace is the Fallout DLC cost 800 Microsoft points. And I guess they only sell them in increments of 500.
Yeah. But I mean that's really the bigger question here, isn't it? Isn't really about usability anymore, it's becoming more about content. Because Microsoft purchased the exclusive rights to Fallout 3 DLC and even Grand Theft Auto 4 DLC, so they can keep it away from Sony and PlayStation 3, we have to pay for it. In 2007, Bethesda put out Shivering Isles for Oblivion, which is, in my opinion, one of the better expansion packs in the past 5 or 6 years. Now we're getting these sort of micro expansions, which are hard to use, we have to pay for, that we might not have paid for a decade ago. It's a
just to stop you there. I mean, Bethesda did put out a couple of DLC, paid DLC things, packages that separate from Shivering Isles. A DLC does not preclude a full blown expansion like Shivering Isles. That's something separate. That's a retail product.
Of course, but Microsoft is in the room with Bethesda shaping what content we receive. Yeah. They purchase the rights to it. They have a say in what is distributed, how it's distributed.
But they purchased rights to the downloadable content. That's different from any retail products they might be making. And like Shivering Isles would be outside of that.
Of course, but I mean they're still influencing this Operation Anchorage and the two that are going to follow. So
right.
That's all I'm saying. That's more concerning to me.
Well, influencing in what way?
I mean, in that, why do you think they're such brief little episodes that are monetized for console users? Is that really something that we see on the PC that often?
Well, I mean,
we have actually seen that with RPGs. I mean, if you look at the Neverwinter Nights series, or if you look at the Baldur's Gate series, with RPGs especially, you would have these little mini episodes that you could download. Not usually for pay. I mean, usually they were mods that were created, but they were out there. They do exist.
Yeah, with big open world games like that, I mean that's been one means of adding new content rather than creating a whole new area. It just like kind of adds in a new section somewhere where there was nothing before. So it's not unheard of, really. And they did do something similar with Oblivion, with the Knights of the Nine expansion, I think it was. It was a downloadable expansion, which it was available to PC gamers through their website. I never actually played that one, so I'm not sure exactly how it was distributed, though. But
Knights of the Nine, I believe that was wasn't that the retail package that was a collection of all of their paid-for DLC that was available from their site.
Mm-hmm. Right, but there was some paid DLC. There was a piece of DLC anyway called Knights of the Nine, wasn't there? I think it was packaged under that on the retail shelf, but it was called that because the big quest part was Knights of the Nine.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. I'm sure you will. Yeah, so I'll get an earful if I got that one wrong. But yeah, moving on, to more downloadable content news. GameStop has, as of about 2 weeks ago, stopped taking pre-orders for Dawn of War 2 on their website. Just like no warning, just it's gone. There's been no official statement. I've contacted THQ about it. They aren't talking. All they're saying is it's available from every other retailer out there. You can get it anywhere except GameStop. You got to kind of wonder why would GameStop not take orders for what's going to be a pretty big PC game? The answer is probably, again, completely unconfirmed, probably that it requires Steam. And for at least a little while, that was a very strong theory of mine because GameStop also did not have the PC versions of Saints Row 2 or 2K's NBA 2K9. On their website, which were all three non-Steam games that required Steam as a part of the install, for copy protection. Since then, just in the last few days, they seem to have added the PC version of Saints Row 2, but NBA 2K9 is still not there, and Dawn of War 2 is still not there. They are taking pre-orders for Empire Total War, but Sega is running some kind of cross promotion with GameStop that may have kept them, off their list. If that's not it, I have no idea why they wouldn't carry Dawn of War 2, because that's just bizarre.
Well, is it that Steam is cutting out the middleman? You can just buy it directly over Steam, or is it because of the there's no aftermarket potential?
Well, I think what GameStop is likely worried about is that. When you install this game, it's going to pop up, and it's going to install Steam as well, which is going to pop up and say, "Hey, here's some games you can buy without having to go to GameStop and sort through our sad little PC corner with and dig
the dungeon, as they call it,
yeah, and dig through the My Little Pony games and Barbie Horse Adventure games to find the PC the good PC games down the bottom shelf." So I would suspect it's they don't like the competition. The fact that they would be selling a product that put their competitor's product list right in front of your face. It's like
I usually can't even find their PC section because I have to crawl over all those used console game bins that they have in there.
Right. But it's a little bit inconsistent. It's surprising that they haven't worked that out one way or the other and either said, no, we're not carrying this because, or carried it because they've realized that all they're doing is telling people to go spend their money somewhere else. It's like when you're, especially the online thing is what I get. Because, when you're buying something online, who cares if you're buying it from GameStop, Amazon, Walmart, anybody is the same online. So, all you've got is brand loyalty, and if all they're saying is our brand doesn't have it. I don't get that. So we'll be keeping an eye on that because it's kind of interesting. I mean, if they are saying we're not going to carry games with Steam on them, which they're doing a bad job of at the moment, then that's kind of really firing a shot across Steam's bow and telling other developers, hey, maybe you shouldn't use Steam. And as your copy protection, because GameStop won't carry it. How much weight that carries depends on how many copies GameStop sells, which we don't know. So, moving on a little bit, we saw a post the other day about I went to UC Santa Cruz, which has a few fluff classes. I took a class on Disney. I took a class on the Beatles. And, there's pretty easy classes, just kind of filler. to round out your schedule and give you something to sleep through. But it's kind of not all that surprising that at Berkeley there is now a class that's taught by a student as part of a democratic education program they've got there, where students can teach their own classes. there's a class on StarCraft. So presumably, I guess a bunch of people get together, once or twice a week and play StarCraft and discuss.
Awesome.
Okay.
Wait, is it broken into three semesters?
It's centered around kind of competitive style play. Like, it's pretty, seems to be pretty serious.
Right.
Analysis of how, like, pathfinding and algorithms and things like that. So.
So there's actually some academic purpose to this.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Okay. Does it have a game design bent to it, or is it just analysis of the game? What is it?
I still can't get past this democratic education component.
Yeah, it's a little goofy. I mean, the other class that I missed out on taking at Santa Cruz because it was offered my junior year, and like the seniors like took up everything really fast because they got to register first. There was a class on The Simpsons. It was like the philosophy of The Simpsons or something. It was like, damn it, I could have taught that class.
There will be a lecture on various aspects of the game from the viewpoint of pure theory to the more computational aspects of how exactly battles are conducted. Calculus and differential equations are highly recommended for full understanding of the course.
Jeez! What the?
Yeah, final project. Let's see.
Where does calculus come in here? I don't know.
I mean, maybe in terms of like creating a build that's super efficient or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, must be. And, you know, I always kind of hate the style of RTS play that just basically turns it into a math problem. You know, getting absolute maximum efficiency out of everything, down to the last, you know, resource point in the last second of last half a second of time and the last, and like, you know, timing how many you know clicks you, how many actions per second or per minute you have. It de-emphasizes, you know, thinking about what you're going to do and emphasizes just rehearsing, doing the same thing over and over again, and just a very robotic way. And the variations that you have of that rehearsed routine can be called strategy because you're observing what the other guy is doing and countering it, but it's not really what I think of as strategy. That's more like the kind of strategy that would go into playing basketball, is because it's all going so fast, you have to make split second decisions. It's less to do with what you typically think of as a strategy game and more to do with what you think of as an action game.
Well, it sounds like the same strategies that were used in the very early age of video games with arcade games, like with Pac-Man, you know, where you set you followed the same strategy every time you played it. It would be exactly the same. You'd just go around the map.
But that's not a strategy. That's a routine. That's a very strict order of operations that you follow.
According to my official Pac-Man strategy guide, that was a strategy.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Chuck you down the gauntlet.
Yeah, I guess it's a semantic argument, but I don't consider that to be strategy.
But these classes aren't unprecedented, though. I mean, I actually have a degree from Pelgal University.
I think we all have degrees from Pelgal University by now.
It's true.
It's framed on my.
Yeah, and we had
Let
a
me
teacher,
see your papers, Dan.
We had a teacher at my. We had a teacher in my high school that actually played Age of Empires in class and put it on TV, and kids just watched him. He didn't really talk about it, but...
And people wonder why there's a problem with our public school education system.
Moving on a little bit, Josh, you were big on this Warhammer Online expansion that's coming out. It's not a retail expansion, but it's free expansion content that's coming out.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It was just announced like 2 hours ago. It's called A Call to Arms. It's because their goal is to bring in new players, or they said to bring back old players that have maybe gone on back to WoW or Conan Online or something. And so it's going to start the end of February. It's coming out in like three chunks, basically. And for each of the chunks, they're having live, what they're calling live events on the servers, where it sounds like it's going to be a batch of like quests, RVR activities, and like other tasks that kind of give you the background of what's happening in the world and like the new characters they're introducing. And if you go through and complete all these quests and stuff, you can actually unlock the content a week earlier. And then after a week, it'll be put on the servers for anybody. And so the content is going to be an area called Land of the Dead, which sounds a lot like Lake Winter's Grasp in World of Warcraft. It's an RVR zone that's attached to a dungeon. So like you have to play against other characters, then only one faction can enter the dungeon at a time. And then there's also two new classes, the Choppa, the Orc Choppa, and, the Dwarf
Slayer.
Yeah, the Dwarf Slayer. And so the Dwarf Slayer, I mean, looks awesome. And so I'm very excited about it. It should be interesting to see how many people try and play through the content to get the lore in the background and unlock it a week early, or if they just kind of sit around and wait and they don't want to bother with doing all these kind of maybe just like runner quests or delivery quests or something to get it.
How long ago were you last in Warhammer Online?
I haven't been playing consistently for at least a month and a half.
Well, when was the last time you jumped in?
About 3 weeks ago, I think, is right after I got back from Christmas break.
Yeah, we've been keeping you pretty busy since then.
Yeah.
But when you were last in there, how did the server populations look?
I was on a low population server. It was medium when I first joined it, and then it hit low pretty quickly after that. So it was pretty low, especially because my guys aren't max level. Mm. And the lower level areas or even medium level areas are really empty right now because there aren't a lot of new players. It's either people that have hit max and are hanging around, or people aren't leveling alt. So the lower levels are really empty. I'm basically skipping all the group quests and not really going on dungeons. It's kind of depressing. It's not really an MMO for me at this point.
You're playing mostly solo?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, well, hopefully this will draw a few people back then.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Evan, were you saying that you're getting some free time with it? Or?
Oh, I know there's some sort of free trial connected with that content release that they're introducing. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, because I know Warhammer had a pretty strong start. It's just kind of a shame to see it dwindle if the people are leaving in droves, which it's just nice to have a few competing online worlds instead of just domination by Blizzard all the time.
I especially like the idea of live events. I know and any MMO that has a lot of live events, if I know about that, I think that would attract me to at least try it out.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I love events where like they're in there controlling the bosses or something, where the devs are actually in there doing stuff. I mean, that's great. And I think this expansion is going to do a lot for Warhammer Online because this is the first real content expansion. Up until now, they've been spending all their time balancing, fixing bugs. And so their goal with this is to get people to come back and try it because really, since launch, since a lot of people have left, they've really fixed a lot of problems and updated a lot of trouble areas. So it is a really different game. It's not a really different game than when it started, but it's a much better game than when it first launched. So I hope a lot of players go back and check it out.
I wonder if developers have ever considered like intentionally launching a game with like a noticeable but not really severe bug, and then having that fix like ready to go. So like the moment people start complaining about it, it's like, oh, here's the fix, and then they get a reputation as developers that are very responsive to the community and can fix things immediately.
Oh my lord! Well, they're conspiracy theories. Jeez, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
Yeah, and it would be it'd probably be a mistake to intentionally have a buggy game. Probably.
Yeah.
I'll go out on a limb and say probably.
They'd be known more for the buggy launch than fixing it, I think.
Right.
But if I could, sorry to go back to the StarCraft thing, but real quickly, if you guys could teach a class about a game, what do you think would be entertaining or fun to teach about? I'd really like to do like an anthropology kind of course on game clans and how they form and interact and work together or guilds and things like that. I've always liked articles in that of that nature, I think.
I think I would like to do one on evolution of the medium, you know, how gaming has just changed over the years.
So it's not we're not talking about specific games we'd want to teach a course about, but something about gaming.
Oh, whatever comes to mind, yeah.
Maybe something about mod design, like community projects, and how it's kind of a decentralized team comes together and produces something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I can tell you, I would love to be in a class where they walk you through the process of creating sound for a game, like how they make all the sound effects, how they trigger them, how they chain them together for scenes. I would find that fascinating.
Well, you'll be fascinated in a little bit, Logan, because we got something about that coming up.
Yeah.
Being the English major I am, I always loved games like BioShock that tell strong stories. I would love a class that like analyzes the stories as deeply as they analyze like literature stories.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there would be relatively few games you could use in your syllabus, but you could probably put them together with a lot of RPGs.
Yeah. It'll be a short course. It'll be a summer class.
Right. But so in some other news, there's the Fear 2 demo is out. I guess none of you slackers have played it yet.
I played it.
You're too afraid.
No, I do know that the demo centers around my favorite part of the game. It takes place in an elementary school, and I think that's where they really nailed the creepy atmosphere the best in the game. So I do encourage you to go out and give it a shot, see what you think. And you know, it's always very intriguing to me, like the parts of games that the developers pull out to center a demo on, because they're really trying to sell their game in just, you know, a few minutes, or you know, like a 30-minute chunk of their game, which is going to be, you know, an exponentially longer experience. So how do you get all of what you want people to experience into that one little part? I think they probably did a very good job here. I think what they actually did was splice together a few chunks of different maps, but from what I've read about people's reactions to it, they got a few very good choices in there. And that kind of demo does take a lot more work, because they're not just chopping out one chunk of one level, like the first 20-30 minutes of a game, but they're actually going in and splicing things together. So,
which is their smart approach.
Right.
Yeah, because when you just get that big slice, you're like, was that? I'm not. You know, I don't really get much of a feel for the game.
Yeah, I might not have gotten to the good part yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is a very gory game, and according to a study put out by the University of Rochester, a new study published in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin shows that violence does not make a game more enjoyable, according to their research, and may actually detract from a game's quote unquote fun factor, decreasing players' interest and desire to purchase a game. I kind of agree with that. I mean, gore does not necessarily have anything to do with you know how good a game is. I mean, I do kind of like sometimes, you know, blasting somebody into a million pieces. That's kind of a neat effect. It does get old after a while, but you know, I some of my most memorable gaming moments are like, you know, in Fallout 1 or 2, I would take the submachine gun and blast somebody, and they would do kind of the bullet dance, you know, taking a bunch of hits to the chest, and then like their torso would explode, you know, basically.
I don't know who these freaks are they tested, but I love gore. I'm serious. I mean, that totally is a huge part of the game for me. Soldier of Fortune, I loved it. I love, you know, Doom 3, watching the brains pop out of the head like a Pop-Tart. I'm all about that. I find it incredibly entertaining, just like I do watching, you know, gory movies. I don't know why, you know, I've never actually killed anybody, so I don't really feel bad about it. I love gore. I love violence in games.
I think
also, it should be noted that the respondents were 89% male and between 18 and 39 years old.
And the surveys were conducted by two online surveys and then four experimental studies.
Oh, for heaven's sake. You know, and there's another statistic about those people. They're liars.
It should also be noted that Logan is a huge horror film fan, so he's an aberration in many.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I like mice, you know? So it's not like I am too.
I'm just wondering, though, if you're filling out this form and you know it's for a study and it asks you a question like, well, you know, do you want more gore? Do you want
more
game? And you say, well, of course I don't. I'm a intelligent thinking human being. I don't want a bunch of violence and, you know, heads exploding.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's exactly why where that statistic comes from. It's just you just kind of know what you're supposed to say and supposed to think, you know?
I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I mean, like, especially in an anonymous survey, and if you know this is going to be it's going to be out there, this information. Like, why would you not give them what you want more of? You know, it's like, I love gore. I'm going to tell them I want gore, and maybe there'll be more gory games. Uh-huh. I don't think that these people were worried that these guys were going to stand up and say, well, Logan Decker says that he likes more gore. He's a pervert.
Yeah, but I mean, what about how, you know, like in when they do polls for elections, and, you know, the polls say one thing, and then, you know, it turns out, whoa, wait a minute, that's not how it turned out at all. You know, because people, I think they don't want to say they're for something. It makes them sound churlish or conservative or liberal or something like that. But, you know, when they actually flip the levers, not that anybody flips levers anymore, I just age myself, but, you know. It's that kind of effect, you know. You just kind of know what you're supposed to say, and you know that it's not right, you know, that the violence is fun, and that you're having a good time, you know, watching brains come out of heads like Pop-Tarts. Not that I have, and not that I'm obsessed with that.
I did like the fourth experimental study took a closer look at the subject's aggressive tendencies. They used a 29-item scale, including such statements as, given enough provocation, I may hit another person. And I sometimes feel like a powder keg ready to explode. And so the study would measure the participants' hostility before having them play a bloodier version of House of the Dead 3.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who's going to answer no to give it enough provocation, I might hit somebody. I mean, but like, what is enough provocation? That's a very subjective thing. I mean, that could be, you know, being beaten to within an inch of your life. And I mean, yeah,
Chuck, do you feel like a powder keg about
right now?
I mean,
don't you touch me. Go off.
All I feel like a powder puff.
Those survey questions remind me of one I had to fill out when I applied to work at a grocery store when I was like 15. Like, they're all basically asking me, am I going to hurt somebody behind the register or something? You know, all designed to see if I was insane.
We asked that same question of all of our new employees, too.
Seriously, it's like something you'd get asked by the Transportation Security, you know, Administration.
Excuse me, sir. Could you just play this House of the Dead 3 level real quick? Continue the interview.
But at the same time, I think we can all agree that gore is not a necessary component of a great game.
No, it's gore is compelling to me because it's that sense of easy input followed by a lot of output in a game. It's a really kind of simple thing where pulling a trigger. Same thing with Ragdoll. Yeah. Like, it's just kind of satiating you in a way of, you press one button, a lot of stuff happens. You know, you get to see a lot of stuff.
But at the same time, there is a reason why in Fallout 3 there is a perk that allows you to, you know, make everyone explode into a ball of gore.
Right. Yeah. It is. I mean, like, the Todd Howard, the producer of Fallout 3, has gone on at length about the violence in that it's supposed to be kind of funny. You know, it's like itchy and scratchy kind of humor.
Yeah. You know, and I love the over the top stuff, you know, and I remember that there was one game that I just thought, you know, that had full motion video gore in it. It was a long time ago, Phantasmagoria.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that's really sickening, you know. It wasn't, I didn't think it was, I don't know, it was different for me. It was just really ugly and tacky.
And I agree. I'm the same way. I mean, for me, over the top gore is one thing because it's cartoony. It's yeah. you know, It's something that is just so over the top and exaggerated that it's not real. But you know, I for example, I'm not going to play Manhunt. That sort of gore does not appeal to me as much.
Oh, I liked it. But then again, I'm a powder keg.
Waiting to explode.
Yeah, Logan loves all the gore and Peggle too. So.
Well, those animal critters have it coming.
But that is kind of an example of the same, like, you know, you do a little something and it just like explodes, like, you are awesome. Look what you did, you're the king of the world.
Rainbows.
Yeah, and actually I agree with you. I mean, all those fireworks and everything, it's that same sort of visceral feedback that you get from, you know, shooting somebody in the head and their head exploding in this big gory, you know, red explosion.
Make the Pop-Tart analogy.
I really liked Evan's description. I thought that was a really compact way of saying it, of, you know, just of what the feeling is, you know, and it's not, you know, it's not because I feel like I'm, you know, I'm really killing people or anything like that. It's just that you get a lot of, you know, payoff.
It makes you feel powerful.
Yeah, actually. Oh, wait, here goes the powder keg.
But so the other little researchy bit of news was a game politics story about a researcher at Texas A&M International University who has concluded that there is, quote, no significant relationship between school shootings and playing violent video games. Writing for the Journal of Investigative Psychology and Offender Profiling, Professor Christopher Ferguson criticizes the methodology used in earlier research linking games to violence and aggression, which, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's all very kind of duh stuff, but it's gratifying to see it come from somebody with professor in front of their names. And, you know, he points out all the stuff that, you know, frankly, the internet has been pointing out for quite some time, which, yeah, he says, it has been the observation of this author, for instance, that the majority of individuals critical of video games are above the age of 35, many are elderly, and oftentimes admit to not having directly experienced the games. Some commentators make claims betraying their unfamiliarity, such as that games like Grand Theft Auto, quote, award points for antisocial behavior, despite the few games award points for anything anymore, instead focusing on stories. And he also, you know, talks about Cooper Lawrence talking about Mass Effect and you know, several other things. Basically, his conclusion is the wealth of evidence fails to establish a link between violent video games and violent crimes, including school shootings. The link has not merely been unproven. I argue that the wealth of available data simply weighs against any causal relationship. So we need, you know, a few more guys like this to just, you know, come out and state the obvious in official research papers that, you know, just counterbalance all the crazies that really want to, you know, and he describes them as participants in what he calls a moral panic. Politicians, news media, and social scientists arguably have motives for promoting hysterical beliefs about media violence and video games specifically. Actual causes of violent crime, such as family environment, genetics, poverty, and inequality, are oftentimes difficult, controversial, and intractable problems. By contrast, video games present something of a straw man, which politicians can create an appearance of actually taking action against crime. So, you know, they're doing something, you know, that doesn't affect anything, but they can say they are. So,
well, and the first thing that came to my mind when I heard it was that you used the word researchy.
So we're getting a little short on time here. So I just want to move along to our new segment. The Practically Impossible Sound Effect Challenge. Andy, are you ready?
Yeah.
You say it's impossible.
Come on, have some enthusiasm. I love that audio.
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah.
I've been... You
know, and I promise that I haven't pre-listened to these, even though Dan was accusing me of pre-listening.
I sent him these sound effect files.
Oh, he thinks he doth protest too much. Like, did anyone even accuse him, right? And he just busts out. Oh no!
It was a preemptive strike.
Yep. But so we, as Logan was saying, sound design is very interesting. We don't often give enough credit to the sound design in games. So it's a huge factor in how immersive it is and how interacting with the environments make you feel. So I've devised a little challenge to the PC Gamer staff and for you listeners out there who can play along Jeopardy style. We'll play some sound effects, and you will match those effects to the game they came from. Today's theme is everybody's favorite weapon of last resort, the pistol.
Was there any pose?
Viva Pinata.
So there are going to be five of these. And they come from in no particular order: Grand Theft Auto 4, Left 4 Dead, Mirror's Edge, Far Cry 2, and Fallout 3. I'll be very impressed if you guys can get this right, since unless you've recently been playing all of these and have an ear kind of thing, have been paying attention, it's going to be really, really tough. But you know, it's still kind of fun to think about. So let's start with number one. All right. Does anybody does that sound familiar to anybody?
Can you say the game?
GTA 4. No, that's definitely Far Cry 2.
Say that again, Logan.
Far Cry 2.
What makes you say that?
The shell casings.
There's no echo either.
Okay. So are you guys in agreement that number one is Far Cry 2?
Probably.
Yeah, I think it's Far Cry 2 as well.
All right.
Oh, nice. I like how you played that one. Like, oh yeah.
Well, we'll see what the other people are.
I have no idea.
Can you give me the game names again? GTA, Far Cry 2, Left 4 Dead,
Mirror's Edge, and
I won't know any
Fallout
from 3. Mirror's Edge.
Fallout 3.
Oh, and Fallout 3. That's right. Okay, yeah. I'm sticking with Far Cry 2.
Okay. So that's the team's answer for number one. Okay. Number two.
Since that's very unfamiliar,
Fallout
3.
Well, since that's very unfamiliar to me, I'm gonna go with Mirror's Edge.
Okay, so Andy says Mirror's Edge. What does everyone else say?
I'll go with Andy on that one.
Shoot, okay, I'm sticking with Chuck on Fallout 3. Are you wavering?
Well, I'm wavering because I'm not really sure, but I'll say Fallout
Evans,
3.
We hear it one more time.
Evans,
he's
the type
wimpy here. Pistol.
Okay, one more time.
It sounds like Fallout 3. There's a little bit of like the 10mm pistol in there.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Fallout 3.
Sure.
All right, but it majority could be, rules. Yeah.
But I'm
majority
okay.
Rules, Fallout. Number three.
Number three.
Dumbasses.
Jesus, that one sounds like it has post-processing going on in it. You didn't add anything to that one, did you?
No, I didn't tweak anything at all.
Okay, so it's definitely not Left 4 Dead.
That's a pistol, huh?
I haven't played a lot of Mirror's Edge, so...
That's so over the top.
Yeah.
I'll put in Mirror's Edge.
Yeah, I'll say Mirror's
Edge.
Sure,
Mirror's Edge.
Mirror's Edge.
Okay, Mirror's Edge has it.
What about Grand... It could be Grand Theft Auto, though.
No way. Not urban enough.
There wasn't enough rap music in the background.
It does not quite have... It does not have street cred.
It's not quite as glocky as I'd hoped. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, number four.
Oh, okay. That's Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, you can
see it.
Yeah.
Sounds like super dusty. Yeah, definitely.
Faux show.
And number five.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Easy.
I can even tell you how many pistols they're wielding.
Yeah, that one was kind of a gimme.
But you can you tell us where they are?
if you play it again, maybe.
I'm making this quiz my bitch.
Yeah, actually, you guys did. You got them all.
Oh,
yes!
Oh. Really? Ah, right. Oh, I thought I was off by one.
Oh, wait. So, yeah. All right.
Yeah, it was. Let's play them again, Andy.
Was Fallout 3?
That was Fallout. Let's play them again, Andy. Number one.
Number one.
Is Far Cry 2. Number two. That's Fallout 3. Number 3. That's Mirror's Edge. Number 4. That's GTA 4. And number 5. is, of course, Left 4 Dead. So, yeah, you guys rock that.
High five.
Did we win a toaster?
Logan is flexing.
I gave that quiz to a few other people, and Will Smith had gotten 3 out of Maximum PC. He got 3 out of 5. But Norm only got 1. Norm only got Left 4 Dead.
They're girls.
So you guys will have to rub that in their faces.
No powder kegs down there.
So nicely done. So just to expand on the discussion of sound, I exchanged some emails with Mark Lampert, audio director for Bethesda, about what he was going for with the pistol in Fallout 3. He said, "I wanted the pistol to sound powerful enough that the player would enjoy using it and get the sense that it's going to be a workhorse and a trusty sidekick again and again, but not so powerful that they don't find the hunting rifle or combat shotgun more appealing when they find those. As a result, the elements that make up the pistol firing sound are fairly simple: a crack, a decent thump, a decent little thump, and a dash of metal on metal as the slide is blown back with each shot. No excessively long tail, not a booming cannon shot, etc. With Fallout, fans want to know that getting the pistol is only the beginning of the beginning. They know for certain that beyond the massive vault door, there will be rifles, machine guns, shotguns, flamethrowers, and the list just gets longer and more exotic until it becomes absurd and comical. So the pistol is just a dependable, sturdy little brick in the larger wall. It's not trying to be too much compared to its bigger brothers, but it does its job reliably and kills rad roaches dead. Sometimes it actually accidentally goes off and kills overseers dead." So I asked him, how did you find the right sound for your pistol? And he says, "With conventional firearms like the pistol, I'm usually working from sound libraries, but I try to avoid using a recording as it exists. I try and use different elements of different recordings to try to at least produce a fresh end result if I can't go and record something myself. For example, I'll use the low end of a cannon shot, the high crack of a small caliber pistol, then perhaps the mid-range of a rifle shot recorded at some distance. There's plenty of mixing and tweaking to be done with the gunshot alone. And then I'll go and I'll find all sorts of mechanical elements to construct the sound of the slide shot, of the slide or bolts, magazine in and out, dry firing, etc. A colleague was kind enough to allow me to record the various mechanical sounds from an assortment of pistols and rifles, and all of that was mixed, matched, chopped, and tweaked to become part of the weapon handling sounds in the game. It's all archived in our sound libraries now, and who knows what will appear as next." And finally, I asked him, why do some... Because all of these sounds were pretty distinct, and you guys were able to nail them, so they're very distinct to their games. I asked him, why do some sound kind of plinky and some sound, blam, like Mirror's Edge, just over the top. He says, "Were I to work on a game where gunplay was not necessarily a major facet of the game, and there were but a few firearms to choose from, I'd probably aim to make each one sound particularly stylized and exaggerated. In Fallout, however, we run the full range from small arms to energy weapons to, a shoulder-mounted mini-nuke. So while I didn't want the smaller weapon to sound wimpy and no fun to use, I do want there to be some room to grow." So then, that's a very good point. I mean, with Mirror's Edge, the focus is not on gunfire. So when you fire a gun, it's more of an event. You're generally trying to avoid the police that are after you, and you can disarm them and grab their gun, but you can't reload it. You can get off a few shots, and you just throw the gun away and keep going. So it's really, really more of a, kind of a "holy crap, I just fired a gun" kind of thing. Whereas with Fallout and with most other shooters, you're firing constantly, so it would just kind of wear on you after a while. But I thought back about a few games that had poor sound design in my recollection. And Evan, I noticed on your Twitter the other day you were saying that you really liked The Club.
Yeah.
That game stood out to me as having really dinky sounding weapons. Like all of them.
I remember that. It really did.
It sounded like you were playing with paintball guns.
Yeah, they're super clicky and indistinct for sure. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Especially the SMG. But that's good insight actually. I mean, especially Fallout 3's weapons, that kind of reflects what I think about them as being very typewriter like and mechanical.
Yeah, and it's this is something that I'm hoping to do more of, and get a little bit more insight into the sound design of games, because it is very interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
How much work goes into it, especially.
And you probably wouldn't guess that much effort went into. And this is actually just excerpts of the emails he sent me. It's actually a big long description of all the work that went into it. But that's just for the pistol. That's pretty amazing. So, and you generally think of, oh, they just grab a sound effect somewhere, but nope. We should take a couple questions real quick.
Hey guys, my name's Rich. I was wondering, what is the craziest thing or strangest thing you've ever done in order to procure a video game? When I was in my 20s, I moved out to L.A., and it was around the time Icewind Dale 2 came out, and I was very excited for the game, so I went to Fry's to pick it up, and I was about 80 cents short, and they weren't going to give it to me. So I went out to the car to dig around for some change. I couldn't find enough. I opened up the trunk. There were all these boxes that I just moved out of my parents' house. And in the one on top was a mint set that my grandparents got me when I was 8 years old. So I promptly cracked that sucker open and took out the shiniest silver dollar you've ever seen and went into Fry's and put that toward Icewind Dale 2. So what crazy things have you guys done for a video game? Have you ever committed a crime? Have you ever passed up sex? Let us know. Thanks.
Whoa!
Isn't it a crime to pass up sex?
I certainly haven't sacrificed any family heirlooms for Neverwinter Nights.
You know. I don't know if that counts as a family heirloom. Oh. It could have been if he'd given it to his kids. But what about? I don't know if I was. I was kind of spoiled. I don't think I ever had to resort to such means. I guess early on, in order to get a copy of I think it was Red Alert. Like the first Red Alert, because those CNC games came on multiple discs. So, my friend and I split the cost, and then we swapped the discs back and forth. I'm going to play Nod first. You play GDI first. Oh, the Red Alert. Sorry, I'll play the Allies first. You play the Soviets first, and then we swapped. But I never had to go to any crazy like organ donating lengths. Selling links, I guess. Donate.
Actually, this is how I got into to PC games was when my parents got the Apple II. I would go down and I volunteered to show people how to use the Apple II at the store where we bought it. And in exchange, they didn't even pay me there. In exchange, I got to take home the software binder. And then I would, the little... The little wee pirate. I would copy the floppies when I got
home.
But no, I mean, it was the same thing. I got to, because I could have just taken the same or whatever. I'm just saying. So I got to take home the game binder and play all the little games. And I guess the second wackiest thing I ever did to play games was get a job future.
I don't know if this is particularly wacky, but after I played Wing Commander 3, I really wanted to play the first two Wing Commanders. So there was this was back when I was still living in Austin, and they would have like a yearly computer and software expo at their old convention center there. And I remember going and just diving through bin after bin of unmarked games. They weren't categorized or anything like that. There would just be piles and buckets of them. And so I went through the entire place until I think I finally found like one Wing Commander 2. That's not very crazy, though.
Been diving.
It is a nice image. I remember the night that Tribes was released. I have too many stories about Tribes, but the night it was released, my mom drove me back from Best Buy. And I was, of course, I read the instruction book in the car on the way home, cover to cover on the way back. And I had a choir concert that night. I had to be too, so I couldn't install it and play it in time. And my high school was actually right across the street from me, almost in my backyard. So right after it finished, instead of sticking around for the post-concert activities, I just ran out, jumped the fence into my backyard, ran through my yard, and started playing. It's just a really good memory. And I was wearing a cummerbund while I was playing Tribes 2. You know?
That's awkward.
How many people can say that? I had a jetpack and a cummerbund. That's all.
I in the future, we all will.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I think in retrospect, I think I drove to maybe three different stores to find black and white one. I think that was probably...
That's
an extra effort.
Those are the days, man.
I bought a game at Walmart once.
Oh, whoa!
Okay, you win.
Yeah. No, it was the World of Warcraft launch. For some reason, I decided that I was going to get into World of Warcraft on the launch day, so we went to the only thing open at midnight was Super Walmarts. And so we went to one, and this is the same street. We went to one on one street, and they were like, no, we don't have it, but the Super Walmart down the street has it. And it's the second Super Walmart on the same street had it. And I was like, why is there two Super Walmarts on the same street?
Because the plan is that they will grow bigger and bigger and eventually merge.
I think they will someday, yeah. And the McDonald's will fuse them together.
Yeah.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Ian. I was wondering, what is your favorite in-game pet? Like, I'm sure for Logan, it's the unicorn out of Peggle. I don't know why. But for me, it was Dog out of Half-Life 2. You know,
Yeah, it kind of ends abruptly. Yeah. But companion characters. I'm sure, Josh, playing some MMOs, you have one or two good ones, right?
Oh, yeah. I have to say, even though everyone has it, the little baby Blizzard bear that Blizzard gave all the WoW players for their fourth anniversary, it's so cute. It's this little baby bear with beady black eyes that follows you around. And when he sits, if you just stand still, he like sits down and kind of wiggles around. I love him.
Yay, wiggling.
Have you ever vivisected him?
I can't say that I have.
That's too bad.
I would say mine would definitely have to be dog meat from Fallout. And that'll do it. Dog meat from Fallout, yeah.
What about Paige from Beyond Good and Evil? He was like a companion. He wasn't your pet, but he was a pig with boots.
Yeah.
Jet boots, no less. That's awesome.
That's a great candidate.
Yeah,
I don't know if I have one that's a pet, but like increasingly as I play Red Alert 3, every time Oleg comes on the view screen as my co-op commander, he's like, "We will crush these Americans," and gives me all these encouraging Russian slang. Like, I feel really really attached to him.
That totally counts.
I don't know. Makes me feel good.
I like Dog a lot too. One of the only ones that comes to mind though wasn't actually from a PC game. It was from Shenmue. And there was this kitten that you found that you could take care of.
Ooh, little kitties.
It was the cutest virtual kitten I think I've ever seen. And I would actually go and feed it treats and everything until I forget what happened to it. I think it finally like got well enough where it found its home or something like that. I forget.
It was kidnapped and tortured because it wouldn't disclose your location.
Well, that's the thing. You could actually like neglect it. And I think it would die.
Also, they're testing cosmetics on it.
That was my kitten.
Josh? Oh, you already said it. Okay, yeah, sorry.
But I will say one more. I was playing that the Mega 10 MMO, and you can get like demon pets, and they had a pet that looks exactly like Puss in Boots from the Shrek movies, and it was excellent. I loved having him. He even posed exactly the same.
Like they owe Antonio Banderas some money.
That's true.
I love it when they find the catnip on him. That's not mine.
Brought back so many memories for Logan.
Oh, no.
You guys are dead inside.
Okay, let's move on to playlists. Logan, what have you been playing?
You know, I haven't been playing a lot this month because I've been building my new system and working on our special issue, which is going to be fantastic. But yeah, I'm building a whole new rig, and it's just taken me forever because there's so much stuff going on. So yeah, but it's based on the Core i7. I got a Core i7 965, and it's smoking fast, and I'm very, very excited. So
video card, if you can spill that information.
GTX 295.
Ooh, fancy.
Oh, yes.
That's a larger number.
Well, yeah, there's going to be a big video card roundup coming up in April. So keep your eyes peeled.
Evan, what have you been playing?
I've sort of been into a lot more strategy lately, playing a bunch of the Dawn of War 2 beta, which is satisfying. I have a good time with it, but I'm still kind of getting adjusted to the responsiveness of the units, which compared to Red Alert 3 isn't as quick, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, Red Alert 3 is a little bit too quick, I think. I mean, it's like battles are over almost instantly, and, you know, things move really fast. You have very little time to respond.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. And in Red Alert 3, I have a lot of fond memories of playing the original Red Alert and going in skirmish mode and just kind of eliminating the enemy's construction yard at the beginning and leaving them with a barracks and then building up this massive force that I would eventually roll in. And, I don't know, a lot of terrible repressed situations that I relive over and over.
Right. Yeah, and Dawn of War, like, I wish that the cover was more of a factor, but because there are so many melee units and things with, like, teleporters and jump jets and so many ways of bypassing the cover, it's not as effective. But when it works, it you know, it extends the battle a little bit so that things that you do make a difference. You know, you have time to give your squad more of a chance to survive or to retreat, you know.
Yeah, and definitely the good thing I can say about it that I'm enjoying so far is the range of units, even in the beta, is there's definitely room to sort of pick one that fits your style of play. I mean, like you said, the Eldar have a stealth element. They can infiltrate. Orcs and Tyranids have a lot more units. Space Marines are sort of controlling one or, you know, a handful of squads, and it's good like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I think they underestimated the desire for is tutorials on how to use all those guys, because it does take a lot of, like, you know, I jumped in and tried to play as the orcs and just got my ass handed to me because it is different. I mean, the nuances of using buffs and things like that to make your to give your characters your squads a chance to survive, you know, it takes a lot of getting used to and you know, figuring out which upgrades to use when. But, you know, after you know, a few games, you'll get the hang of it. Chuck, what have you been playing?
Well, I finally managed to finish Fallout 3, which was a big achievement for me because I used to have this kind of almost like a running gag with Greg the V. Viderman back when he was here, and that was that I always got really excited about Bethesda RPGs and then would never actually finish them. Because I love Daggerfall, so I was really, really excited about Morrowind coming out, and then didn't really play it. And then I was really, really excited about Oblivion, didn't really, really play it. And so now, finally, I played and I finished Fallout 3. Unfortunately, I didn't know that I wouldn't be able to continue my game after finishing it, and I found out that like more than half of the map is still unexplored. So I can't wait to, you know, try out the DLC so I can continue.
I keep telling you, you should just start a new character and play through differently.
But see, I don't want to do that. I want to have the choice of being able to continue with the same character.
You'll do it, and you'll like it.
I should be able to have, you know, that choice of being able to continue instead of starting a brand new character, because then I feel like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you start a book from the beginning. I know that there's going to be differences and I can go different places this time, but still it's like you're starting all over again.
Right. And that is kind of a drag because, I mean, at the very beginning, at least you're kind of limited in what you can do because, you know, there's only a few kind of starting area quests that you can do. And, you know, after you've done those two or three times, then, you know, it gets a little old. Although, Chuck, I do agree with you that you should have the choice, and I did raise that with Bethesda, you know, when we did the first hands-on with Fallout. And, you know, it talked about it a little bit, but they're like, no, we kind of want to stick to our guns. We want people to build a new character and build new traits and not... Because they're worried that they didn't want it to become like Oblivion, where you keep playing with your character and eventually you get all powerful at everything, which, you know, is a very good point. I mean, that's not what really Fallout is about. It's always been about a specialized character who isn't, you know, all powerful at everything, doesn't have maxed out lockpicking and stealth and big guns and little guns and energy guns and explosives. You know, you kind of have to pick your perks. You know, it's and the negative aspects of picking your perks is that you didn't pick something else. So you know, their philosophy is sound. I just don't think it's as much of a crowd pleaser as being able to continue afterwards. And one of the DLC changes they're planning to do in the future, which unfortunately you'll probably have to use Games for Windows Live to get, will raise the level cap to 30 and make the ending not an end as much. They'll let you free play afterwards. Josh, what have you been playing?
See, I wish I had some awesome triumphant music right now because I finally hit level 80 in World of Warcraft and I'm very excited.
Congrats. Chuck will sing something.
Thank you.
Chuck, sing a theme.
No. It was supposed to be your turn this week.
It's your turn. It says Chuck Osborne week theme, singing week.
So yeah, anyways, I'm okay without a song, guys. I appreciate the thought, though. I got level 80. I've been doing a lot of dailies, kind of doing heroics, getting geared up to try and catch up with everyone, but that's really exciting. I've also been playing a lot of Godfather 2 for review, which has been a lot of fun.
All right, and Andy?
I've been playing a lot of Far Cry 2. I've been trying to get into it, but...
So that's how you knew that sound.
That is true, because I'd just go around shooting the pistols in the air like a madman.
Powder keg.
Because I'm such a powder keg. But the thing is, when you were talking about the violence discussion earlier, I was thinking, like, I think I need the violence because I don't get the tingles like I did when I killed someone in Fallout 3, you know? And then in Far Cry 2, you just, like, slaughter someone and you're like, oh, okay.
I want it noted that I never said I got tingles.
Well,
I never said that.
You do, though. Come on, right?
Everyone does.
Come on. I'm not the only one, right? Right?
Usually around 13.
Right now.
No. But yeah, Far
Cry.
For
most people, the tingle is not usually associated with murder, but.
Far Cry 2 is cool. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And let's see. I have remained steadily addicted to Defense Grid. I've started a new character in Fallout actually to play the Operation Anchorage stuff, but haven't actually gotten to that. I read that it was too easy if you played through it as a level 20 character, so I didn't want to do that. Didn't want to use one of my established characters. So started a new guy to do that. But yeah, that's the only reason I haven't played through that yet. And yeah, Defense Grid is really really addictive.
That's some potent stuff there.
So yeah, that'll about do it for this week. That's an extended 1.5 podcast for you, since to make up for missing last week. But we will see you again next week, same time, same place. In the meantime, you can send us your questions at in MP3 form at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Or at the number that I can never remember. Andy, what is it?
1-877-404-1337, and the extension is 724, which spells PCG.
All right, and then you can also subscribe to the magazine by going to gamesradar.com/PC and looking for the button on the left-hand side of the screen. For myself and everybody else here, we will see you next week.
Later, Gators.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
You used to call me first.
I switch it up. You know, we can't have the same routine every time, or else it'll just get old.
Ass pony.
Wow. What a nice way to welcome Andy back.